Hello everyone, Kelly here with a quick note to say that since recording this latest episode of the official Fantasy Premier League podcast, the Premier League have announced another double game week for game week 26, with eight teams now playing twice. You can find all of the details of those at premierleague.com and we'll of course preview those in an upcoming podcast. This pod though still contains plenty of content to help you navigate game week 24, so enjoy. From the Premier League, it's the official Fantasy Premier League podcast. The Premier League's almost back. We're assessing January transfers we could be bringing in to our teams and what impact will Frank Lampard have in charge at Everton. Hello and welcome back to the official Fantasy Premier League podcast. It may only be a week since we've been with you and there might not have been any Premier League football since then, but it does still feel like we've got a lot to talk about. It's a good job then. I've got a bunch of chatterboxes alongside me. It's hello to Mr. Adrian Clarke.
Hello.
It's a big hello as well to Jonathan Fadugba.
Good morning, Kelly.
Good morning. Also to our final panellist, it's Sam Bonfield of FPL Family.
Morning, Kelly.
Yes, good morning to you all. A reminder, we are midway through game week 23 with Burnley versus Watford still to come. No Emmanuel Dennis for that one, of course, after his sending off against Norwich in Watford's first double game week fixture. So as it stands, it is still one of the lowest scoring game weeks in FPL history with an average of just 30. And lots of managers are clearly worried as there are around 80,000 wildcards currently active. But the good news here on this week's podcast is that our panel were all above the average point score, and there is of course still the opportunity for them to build on it. We'll start with the highest scorer of the game week. In fact, you're all much higher than me with just 29 points. Adrian, the last time you were on 2 weeks ago, you just played that wild card and it hadn't gone so well, so it must be nicer to be on this week when it's gone a bit better.
Yeah, I guess so. I'm very surprised that I'm the top scorer for this week, I've got to say, because I was pretty disappointed with 38 points, but look, yeah, hopefully Josh King is my captain, can go and deliver more points at Burnley. Yeah, I made a slight error in taking out Mason Mount for Rafinha. It was part of my big Chelsea offload ahead of the FIFA Club World Cup. I probably should have held fire because he came in, didn't he, with an assist for Thiago Silva. But in general, not too bad. And I'd put Bowen on the bench, one of the most informed players in the division. And it didn't sit easy with me, Kelly. But he was at Old Trafford and he didn't deliver, so I was relieved about that too.
You brought in Varane on that wild card and that looks a particularly good decision, especially now given their double.
Yeah, pleased with that. Yeah, I feel that it's going to come for Manchester United in terms of it clicking under Ralph Rangnick. We saw one or two signs, didn't we, before this break. And with Varane, When I look at the United defenders at the moment, or certainly prior to this breather, I couldn't guarantee any of them playing, really, apart from Rafa Varane. And the other thing about him that appeals is that wherever he's been, he's scored goals. Not loads, but he normally scores 3 or 4 goals per season from corners. So I'm hoping that will click for him in the coming weeks.
Well, Adrian still has Joshua King to play, as he said. Went for him over Dennis. You must have known something that the rest of us didn't. Jonathan, you did have Dennis, but you didn't captain him. Instead, you did the lesser selected João Pedro. He's owned by less than 1% of managers. What made you bring him in instead?
I needed a differential, and I saw Watford in the game against Leicester, I think it was, in the FA Cup, where João Pedro scored. And I really rate him as a player. I think he's going to be a really, really good player in the future. I think he'll get a big move, and I think he's destined for big things, in my opinion. So it was a huge gamble. The week before, I wildcarded, I brought him in against Newcastle. Obviously, he scored that goal. And I just thought, why not keep him and maybe put him as a captain because of the double game week? When I watched the Watford-Norwich game, I did sort of watch it with, you know, my eyes half closed, and I was very concerned because he wasn't really getting in goal-scoring positions. He was outside the box a lot, trying tricks and things like that. And it just was a horror game for Watford, wasn't it, in general? But I'm hoping the Burnley game, he can sort of make up for it. And I've got Ben Foster as well off the bench to come in. So hopefully those guys can boost my score for this week. So Rudiger will come in as well. So I'm not too disappointed in a low-scoring game week. But yeah, I need João Pedro to to do the goods, do the business in this coming weekend.
I wouldn't mind that either. Let's talk a little bit about your wild card as well, because you played it in game week 22. What's gone well for you? Because it's seen you shoot up the ranks, hasn't it?
I had to sort of make some changes. I had a lot. I had too many sort of Chelsea defensive assets. I've had Mendy, Rudiger, and I had Reece James for some time, so they needed changes. And I just needed a lot of surgery to my team, really. So I thought, you know what, let's wildcard it. And I went quite brave. I brought in two Brighton players, and then obviously João Pedro as well. I went with Alexis McAllister and the captain Neil Mopé, which I wasn't too happy about when he was dropped against Chelsea. He was rested, which really frustrated me. But the assist against Palace made it not too disappointing. I also brought in Kevin De Bruyne. That allowed me to bring in Kevin De Bruyne, the extra funds. And I think, you know, I've been really happy with him. Got Bernardo Silva back as well. Need him to step up a little bit in the coming weeks because he didn't do too much. But, you know, I've got full faith in B Silva. So, yeah, I was really happy with that wild card that week. I very much enjoyed that game week. And hopefully this João Pedro can score in the next one and then I'll be on a nice little run.
Sam, for you, you went for Joshua King, captained him, no Emmanuel Dennis. You've got 37 points so far. How are you feeling about the game week, other than being smug that you didn't go for Dennis?
To be honest, Kelly, I would have gone for Dennis. It was just that I didn't really want to have two Watford forwards moving forward. And I'm trying to hold my wild card for a little bit longer. I think there's been, you know, so many games postponed this season. I want a few more of them to get rearranged before I start thinking about wild cards and who's coming in. So the fear of not owning Dennis, I must be honest, it was really real on that Friday evening. So I do feel like I got away with one a little bit. Josh King captain still to play, so that feels quite nice. Couple of clean sheets in there as well, but not much else. It was kind of a good week to have a bad week, if you know what I mean, because nobody was having a particularly great game week. So I feel like with a bit of a green arrow coming out of this one, that will likely stay, obviously, with King as captain. So yeah, it feels quite promising this time around.
Well, Sam said there it feels a lot more promising having Joshua King. Let's talk a little bit about that Burnley versus Watford game because we touched upon it there. As we've said, no Emmanuel Dennis, but it is Roy Hodgson's first game in charge of the Hornets. How do we see this one going from an FPL point of view, Adrian?
Well, the one thing that stands out is that Watford have suddenly got more chance of keeping a clean sheet. I'm not too sure how many people have got Watford defenders in. Obviously, Foster is a big one. A lot of people have got him in their side. So I do believe that they've got a better opportunity of conceding fewer goals with him because that's what he's about, isn't it? He will organise them. He'll get them a little bit probably deeper, more compact. And he'll try to frustrate Burnley, who were pretty good, weren't they, against Arsenal? They were really sort of stubborn opponents. They had good shape themselves. They didn't look like conceding in the match either. So I think it's a low-scoring game, if I'm being honest, with so much at stake. That's how I see this one panning out. Even though I've got King as captain, I'm not expecting it to be a 3-2 thriller where he gets a brace particularly.
Yeah, not expecting this game to be too high scoring at all. But Burnley, we do expect them to have Maxwell Cornet back from AFCON. Given the fact that Burnley have got all of these games that they've still got to play, are you going to be keeping an eye on him, Jonathan?
Explosive start to his Premier League career, really, compared to how he, you know, at Lyon, he wasn't a hugely kind of standout player to a certain extent. There were, so maybe you could argue, better players around him. And he's kind of adapted to the Premier League in style. He's not one for me, I don't think, in FPL terms, just simply because I think Burnley, I think the accumulation of games is potentially a risk for them because I think they might end up overplaying him because he's so important to them. And also, just I'm not really sure what to make of Burnley at the moment. I think there is maybe some potential there for them in terms of maybe defensive players because they are always good from set pieces and you know, clean sheets, they can rack them up. And of course, you know, they've got so many games to catch up on that I think, you know, they could get on a nice little run of steam. But Cornet, I just think there's better options attacking-wise out there for me to kind of bring him in at this moment in time. He's one I'll keep an eye on, and I definitely think FPL-wise he's got value. But right now, for me, he's not someone that I'd take out, say, you know, the De Bruyne or a Bowen or a Silva, someone like that for. And of course, when you're looking at FPL at the moment, you're kind of thinking, is it, you know, Salah time as well? So you've got to factor that in. So for me, Cornet's just someone I'm leaving for now. But certainly an option to consider, I think, for FPL players.
I sort of disagree, though. I think at 5.9 million, Cornet can offer you real value for money in that midfield. We're talking about a time when no attacking premium forwards are really doing the business in FPL. So you're going to have a lot more budget to spend in the midfield, which means you don't necessarily need to have a 4.5 million midfielder. So if you can afford to go up to someone like Cornet, who's going to be the heartbeat of that Burnley attack alongside their new signing, who obviously looks like up top, I'm sure we're going to talk about him a bit later, but he'll be there in the right positions. If Cornet can get the ball into him with that many games in hand, I think he might just be worth a pump, particularly if you're wildcarding.
Well, Burnley versus Watford kicking off at 6 p.m. on Saturday in the only Premier League fixture taking place this weekend. A reminder, once again, our FPL mini league is still active. Money Mace is still top. If you want to put yourself to the test against him and everyone else, the league code is 1KIKS7. Okay, well, this week may not have seen any Premier League action, but there was no rest for our top flight clubs as we saw one of the busiest conclusions to the January transfer windows in recent years earlier this week. So let's take a look at some of the main moves who we could be eyeing up for a swift move into our FPL teams. Well, what a January transfer window that was, with some huge deals done, particularly in the closing stages. So let's see who's worth bringing into our squads. We also asked you on social media, at Official FPL on Twitter, which new January signings are you interested in buying? Thank you to everyone who replied. Tincho Romeo says Weghorst and Dina for sure, and maybe Eriksen and Kulusevski. Adam says Dina and Coutinho starting and Wood on the bench. I like that. He's even told us where they're going to be within his squads. Let's ask our panel then, and let's start with the headline. Christian Eriksen is back in the Premier League, but this time on the other side of London at Brentford, and he's priced at what seems like a bit of a bargain, 5.5 million. Now, on a human level, this is just wonderful to see him back playing after the horrific experience he had at the Euros last summer. But also from an FPL point of view, with that price, Sam, we know you love a Spurs asset. He's obviously been brilliant for Spurs over seven seasons at the club. Is he straight back into your team?
Oh, it's just such a lovely story, isn't it? And I was so excited to see him get a contract again with Brentford for the rest of this season. Now, I think for me, from an FPL perspective, I'm not expecting him to necessarily come straight back in. He's going to take plenty of time to get back up to match fitness. They're obviously going to keep his health at the centre of everything that happens down at Brentford. So I expect he'll get a few minutes here, a few minutes there, and he'll start building up. So at 5.5 million, if he starts building up to be getting, say, 30, 45 minutes per game over the next few game weeks, then might be the time, because goodness me, Christian Eriksen is one of the most creative players. And I think he will make a fantastic FPL asset, but health will come first, minutes will be managed. So it's time to wait and see.
Yeah, they love a set piece too, Brentford. 97 shots from them this season, ranking them third in the league for the campaign so far. And he's not too bad at those, is he, Jonathan? So if he's getting the minutes, surely he will be someone that we have to look at eventually. Although what Sam said does ring true with the fact that he hasn't played much football.
Yeah, I think, I mean, like you say, the first thing to say is it's amazing to see him back. It's such a nice story, and I really hope he can kind of get back to full fitness and really prove himself again, because he is a quality player at the end of the day. Hopefully his health can be managed and you know, he can have no kind of effects. But as Sam just said, I think they're going to have to manage his fitness. You know, Premier League's a very intense league. I can't imagine him playing many 90 minutes consecutively at least for the first, you know, maybe month or so, while he sort of readapts to first team football again. I don't really like Brentford at all at the moment, actually. I think I'm a bit worried about them. I think they're kind of maybe dark horse to go down. They've lost six of the last seven games, I believe, and are just kind of plummeting at the moment. The one thing I'd say about Eriksen, if you're thinking about FPL, Brentford are very innovative from set pieces. They're very clever in how they go about their set pieces, and I think that's where he'll be a real asset potentially for Brentford. But in terms of an FPL perspective, I'm not convinced that he's someone that I'm going to bring into my team at this moment in time.
On that, Jonathan, they have the highest expected goals from set pieces, Brentford, 11.2. And they've scored eight. So they should have even scored more than they have. So yeah, and Eriksen, you'd imagine his deliveries might be even better than the guys that are putting them into the box at the moment. So yeah, I think fast forward a month, and Eriksen at 5.5 million will suddenly look quite an attractive proposition.
I should also just remind you of his incredible FPL credentials when he was at Spurs. 226 appearances, 52 goals, 73 assists, 1,098 points. So if he can get playing regularly, what an asset he could prove to be. Brentford's game week 25 to 29 fixtures are Palace at home, Arsenal away, Newcastle home, Norwich away and Burnley at home. So some nice fixtures in there for Thomas Frank's side. Now, Everton were also one of the headlines on deadline day, not only because they appointed Frank Lampard as their new manager, but also because they made some really interesting signings too. Firstly, let's mention Lampard's appointment. Is this good news, Sam, for our Everton assets?
I think it is, yeah. I think, you know, when we saw Lampard at Chelsea in his first season, he did a blinding job at a club that were on a transfer ban. He had just young players who needed motivating and who needed moulding into being a squad that could do things. And they did things that season. The Chelsea finished in the top four. They made the Champions League. He had a fantastic season. I think coming into Everton, they needed a shake-up. It really hadn't worked under Benitez. He'd lost the fans. And as soon as you lose the fans, you have real problems then. The players then weren't really playing for him either. Lampard, I think, is one of those managers who will probably get the best out of the sorts of players that he signed. You know, Dele Alli and Van der Beek, both of them are players that haven't really lived up to their hype over the last few seasons. We were expecting great things from both of them, and neither of them has really had the game time to show what they can do under the most creative and arguably the best FPL midfielder that we've ever had in the game. Surely he can get the best out of those sorts of players.
Yeah, that's the hope, isn't it? I saw the video that Everton put up where Frank Lampard met with Dele Alli that Everton put up. And when you see them together, you just think, wow, I remember how good Frank Lampard was. Surely he can be the man to bring out the best in Dele Alli. Adrian, you're nodding along. Do you feel confident that maybe at last we could see the best come from him?
I feel more confident in Dele Alli for sure. Yeah, if anyone can give Dele Alli pointers and tips on how to score goals from midfield, it's Frank, isn't it? So he's looked a bit of a lost soul, hasn't he, for a long time, Dele Alli. That fire that we saw when he broke through at Spurs has sort of gone and he needed a new challenge. So I'm really, really pleased for him that he gets the opportunity. The concern is obviously his goal record. If you sort of take away his penalty goal at Wolves at the start of this season, he hasn't scored in a season and a half. He's got one assist. People will say, well, what about the game time? Well, he's had 1,277 minutes. So that's quite a long time. I think that equates to over 14 games, basically with one goal, one assist, and the goal was a penalty. So there's a lot of improvement to come. But he's a real player, isn't he? And I loved him when he was younger, even though he played for Spurs. It was just such a good finisher. And I don't think you do lose that. I think it's a confidence thing. He needs to be loved. I think Frank is a very good people person. I think he'll put his arm around him. We saw that in the video, didn't we? He'll put his arm around him. And he will get more out of Dele Alli. My one minor concern is how does he fit Dele Alli and Donny van der Beek into the same team? Because I think Frank's a bit of a 4-2-3-1 man. And they both really want to play in that 10 role. So it'll be interesting. It might be that we see them both either side of an Alan, potentially. That would be a really bold way to play. And actually, it would make Everton a really exciting side to watch, I think.
Yeah, from one player who we know has got the potential to be really explosive in FPL in Dele Alli to someone who we've never really seen the best of in Donny van der Beek, Jonathan. As Adrian said there, it's an interesting one, Everton signing both of them, because probably had they gone to separate clubs, we'd be looking at both of them and saying maybe they can take this number 10 role or they'll play regularly. But does that concern you that Everton signed both of them? And for you, who's the better asset if you're going to look at either?
Yeah, I think Donny van der Beek must have been sort of, delighted to get out of Manchester United, where he had so few minutes in the Premier League at least. And then suddenly turns up and Dele Alli's there as well. So he's got another challenge again in that sense. I think the fear that I don't think he suits that kind of more withdrawn midfield role. I think he is a sort of a more forward minded attacking midfielder. So I think he's always been kind of misused at Manchester United, to be honest. And I suppose the challenge now for Lampard is can he sort of mould a team in that sense. The interesting thing with the Everton squad is that Rafa Benitez was very keen to build a team around kind of wingers, wasn't he? Wide players like Townsend and Damari Gray. So now it's kind of like the squad is almost, this is the problem when you sort of have such a churn of managers that you've now got a squad that maybe isn't suited to how Frank Lampard might want to play, as Adrian's just mentioned there, with his potential formation. So I'm not sure how that's going to work. So I'm going to, you know, opt out for a bit and see how it all plays out, to be honest. I do think there's real value in Dele Alli, potentially at his price, if he can pick up some form, because I think he's the kind of player that he just needs a little bit of love, like Adrian mentioned there, and a little bit of, you know, affection from the fans and that kind of thing. He could, if he rediscovers his form, he could explode. So he's the one probably I'm looking at and thinking, yeah, maybe he might take a punt and you can maybe get some value there if you wanted to go in early. But for me, I'm always a little bit wary when there's a new manager, new players. I like to see how things play out. So I'll leave Dele Alli and Donny van de Beek for now. Just on the Everton point, one thing I'd say is Dominic Calvert-Lewin and Richarlison maybe now could benefit from that service from those two players. So I think they potentially now come into my thinking as maybe forward options definitely in the next few weeks.
Well, Sam, you actually have Dominic Calvert-Lewin. You bought him in game week 21. You've had a grand total of 3 points from him. Sorry to bring that up again. But does this make you feel, as Jonathan's just said, they're a little bit more confident about having him in your team?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think I bought him in on the basis that they had plenty of games that they had still to be rescheduled at Everton. And I thought he had the potential. You know, Dominic Calvert-Lewin has always been one of those players that I've liked owning in FPL. He can be really explosive when managers get the best out of him. And we saw from Lampard at Chelsea that Tammy Abraham came from nowhere to be a great fantasy asset a couple of seasons ago. Similar situation could happen here with Dominic Calvert-Lewin. They're a very similar type of player. So yeah, I actually feel like I might be a little bit ahead of the game now owning Dominic Calvert-Lewin, having pre the appointment of Lampard been thinking maybe I need to move him on. Maybe it's a spot for Ollie Watkins at Aston Villa because of their nice fixtures. But now Calvert-Lewin will definitely be staying.
Okay, well, Dominic Calvert-Lewin is priced at 7.9 million now. And if you want to bring in either of Everton's new men, it's 5.7 for Donny van de Beek and 6.2 for Dele Alli. I also feel like because I told you about Christian Eriksen's record at Spurs, Dele Alli in his first three seasons at the club, he got 166, 225 and 175 points. Those were the days, hey, Sam?
Definitely. Can we go back, please?
Moving on to the other side of Merseyside now. Liverpool made a signing of their own with Colombian winger Luis Diaz joining the club. He's been priced in FPL at 8 million. 77 league appearances for Porto with 26 goals and 15 assists. Now, that is another exciting attacker the Reds have. How does this shake things up, do you think, Adrian?
It shakes things up nicely. I think Sadio Mane is under pressure. I've just done an analysis piece on Luis Diaz for the Premier League, and so I had to sort of dive a little bit deeper on him. He looks a real talent. The one thing I would say, even though he's got 16 goals this season and some really good goals among them as well, his right foot looks deadly. He's got an absolute ping on him. He can score with headers as well, like Sadio Mane. And he very much is at his best from the left. The one thing I'll say is that until this season, he was a bit of a fringe player at FC Porto. So he's hit an unbelievable purple patch. Is that all it is? Or is this something that's sustainable? It looks to me as if he's a real talent. Brilliant dribbler as well. In the Champions League, very few players had more successful dribbles than him. Very few players created more chances than Luis Diaz in the Champions League. In fact, it was just Jack Grealish, Mo Salah and João Cancelo from the Premier League ranks. They created one more chance than Luis Diaz in the Champions League group stage. So he's at that level in terms of his creativity and he scores goals. So I think if he settles, we've got a real player on our hands and someone that at 8 million definitely would interest me. So, yeah, we'll have to see. At the moment, I'm Team Jota and I'll probably be Team Salah in a week or two's time. But Luis Diaz is someone that if you get in on early, could turn out to be a real bargain because I do think he'll make his debut against Leicester.
Just throwing that in at the end there, all those people thinking of bringing Mo Salah back, Adrian thinks he could start at Leicester. Do we expect him to start? How does this affect the rest of Liverpool's attack, Jonathan?
I think the big thing to worry about now or to sort of manage is Jota. I think now, from my point of view, that's a slight worry for me in terms of he's in my team. I think that will impact the amount of minutes he gets. So now that's going to factor in my thinking of how much, you know, I rely on him because I think he's a brilliant player, he's having an amazing season. But if he's going to have reduced minutes, then you've got to bear that in mind. It's interesting about Mane because, yeah, I mean, Liverpool have the top three players for XG in the league out of four. It's ridiculous, really, Mane, Salah and Jota. So adding Diaz into the mix is, you know, for Liverpool fans, they've got to be licking their lips with that one. But I don't know how, I mean, I think Liverpool will give Leicester a bit of a beating, to be honest. So it will be sort of take your pick, and we'll see how the players return from AFCON. Mane is notoriously incredibly fit, so I think he will come back into the team. Will Salah, I'm not sure, but Diaz is a superb talent, that's for sure. I think his minutes will be managed between now and the end of the season, so I don't expect him to be someone who explodes unless he does really, really well. But it does give you more kind of options, I suppose, if you're looking for Liverpool players in your team. For me personally, my one conclusion from this is sort of a bit of a red flag for Jota. Maybe it might be time for me to move him on, because I think his minutes will reduce.
What about you, Sam? Is it a gift having another Liverpool attacker at just 8 million, or is it actually a headache as an FPL manager?
I don't think he's going to challenge Jota. I think Jota was brought in to challenge Firmino. Firmino, he's 30 now. He's getting to the point of his career where maybe he might be just not able to do 90 minutes a couple of times every week. And Jota has come in and he's done an absolutely fantastic job. I think Diaz has been bought as that version for Mane. We, whilst are seeing good stuff from Mane still sometimes, I don't think Mane is as good this season as he was last season, or indeed the season before. And I suspect Diaz will share minutes with Mane over the course of this season. I don't think he's going to have an impact on Jota really at all. I suspect, therefore, that it becomes a straight choice whether, with your Liverpool assets, you want to go and stick with the midfield double up, or whether you want to go away from the midfield double up and maybe double up with the defenders instead, with the likes of Trent and Robertson. For me, I'm going to be sticking with Jota for a while. If Diaz gets regular minutes, and I think those regular minutes will come by sharing with Mane, maybe he could be a decent option, because therefore he's what, 0.4 cheaper in the game than Jota. So you could save yourself a little bit of money. We're all going to want Salah back if we don't already have him back. I think Diaz could be one to watch, but I don't suspect that he'll be problematic to Jota. I think it'll be more Mane that's got to watch his back.
Okay, well, so far, Sam, we've been talking about all the players that left Spurs or got away. Let's now talk about the players that you did actually bring in. You did make two signings in the end, Rodrigo Bentancur and Dejan Kulusevski. Who's your pick from these? Should we be keeping these on our radar in FPL?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're definitely ones to keep on the radar. I think in some ways they're what we needed. Kulusevski, he's going to be one of those players that maybe longer term challenges Moura's minutes, but I don't think that's going to be a quick thing. I think Lucas Moura's been playing incredibly well this season, and he's been pairing up nicely with Son and Kane. The only thing I would say about him is that if Conte wants to move to playing just two up top, he could be the perfect player for that, because he would give them that width that would allow Son to play alongside Harry Kane. And that could make Sonny an absolutely fantastic FPL asset if we see him in that forward position all the time. With Bentancur, I think he's an interesting and exciting option for Spurs. He's going to give us more security. He's going to be that kind of tall. He's very, very tall. He's very fast. He could give us that security defensively, but he's more of a defensive minded midfielder, so not necessarily going to be an FPL asset. But Kulusevski, let's have a wait and see how he gets on.
Bentancur priced at 5 million, Kulusevski is priced at 6 million. Both of those are midfielders. Elsewhere, sorry, Adrian, I know you don't like talking about good news for Spurs, but Son is back in training. Surely that's going to feel like a new signing for them almost.
Big bonus, yeah, absolutely. And the fixtures look pretty tasty, I think, from a Spurs point of view. So yes, Son is absolutely on my radar. There's no anti-Spurs agenda in my FPL life. So yeah, he's under serious consideration, because I think he'll come back into the team and I think he'll deliver goals. He just feels a slightly safer bet than Harry Kane this season. Although that could change, of course, because Harry's so good.
Moving on to Burnley now. We've already spoken briefly about them and their game against Watford this weekend. But in terms of FPL assets, we haven't really spoken about them this season. But they made a very interesting deadline day signing in Wout Weghorst from Wolfsburg to replace Chris Wood. He has 115 goals from 230 games for AZ Alkmaar and Wolfsburg. And he's been priced at 6.5. What do we make of him, Jonathan?
Yeah, of all the sort of January transfers that we've been reviewing, he's the one that intrigues me a lot, to be honest. He's, as you said, is a kind of like-for-like replacement, very Burnley, very Burnley prototype, you know, hugely tall, you know, sort of muscular centre forward who's going to get on the end of crosses and elbow people and, you know, just put his body on the line. Averaging 2 shots per 90 minutes at his previous club. So, you know, he is getting on the end of chances, 6 goals, I believe, as well. So, you know, this season. So he's going to be someone I think will immediately just go straight into that first team and kind of, he's not someone I think will struggle with the physicality of the Premier League. So I imagine that he'll be a kind of player that you can pretty much hang your hat on that he'll be getting a lot of minutes. So he, with the, you know, as you've mentioned there, with the accumulation of games Burnley have in hand, he's definitely one that's going to come into my thinking. Burnley, a team obviously who very heavily focus on set pieces, throwing balls into the box. And I think he will get chances here and there. So yeah, he's someone I am considering actually for my team.
Yeah, Veghorst is another player that I've done some analysis on this week. He's going to double figures in 6 consecutive seasons. So he's consistent goal scorer. Okay, he's been playing for teams that have been slightly higher up the league. Wolfsburg this season, incidentally, are right down the bottom. So he scored 6 in a poor team this time around. And in his 3 years in the Bundesliga, now the Bundesliga is a strong league, isn't it? He's finished among the top 4 goal scorers in all 3 seasons. So he's got pedigree. This is a guy that knows where the back of the net is. I think he is an upgrade on Chris Wood. If Chris Wood went to the Bundesliga, do you think he would finish in the top 4 for 3 seasons running? I'm not convinced. So I think it's an upgrade. And he also takes pens. Now, we know that Burnley don't get very many penalties. But when they do, it wouldn't be a surprise if he takes them because that's something he did for his previous club.
Finally, another team we haven't been able to mention too much this season either, but they were the biggest spenders in Europe this January. Newcastle United, who made 5 signings. Sam, are any of those catching your eye at all?
Yeah, I think that what they've done to that defence is really attractive to us as FPL managers, and it will probably be the thing that keeps them in the division. Yes, they've signed a couple of attacking players, but I do think it's the defenders that will make all the difference here. Obviously, we had the arrival of Kieran Trippier, and he, of course, has his roots at Spurs. In his last season in the Premier League, he made 27 appearances, scored 118 FPL points that season. He has goals to his name. He has assists to his name. He has plenty of clean sheets to his name. On the other side of the pitch, you've got now Matt Target, who I think was incredibly unlucky to lose his spot in that starting 11 at Aston Villa. He is a fantastic player. Again, has goals to his name. Has assist potential to his name. They are attacking wing backs. They're going to be getting in all the right places. Stick Dan Burn in the mix too. Now, he's not going to give you that attacking threat, but he is going to give you defensive security. So you've got attacking defenders who we can invest in from FPL alongside a really solid central defensive pairing, likely in Lascelles and Burn. Suddenly, that's a defence that I would get on board with to keep clean sheets and therefore would be worth the FPL investment.
Okay, so Sam's looking at their defence, but the main player that's got all of the Newcastle fans in a frenzy, Adrian, is Guimarães. He's their marquee signing this window. But is he an FPL option for us, do you think?
Oh, he's a really good player, I know that. And yeah, they're lucky to have him. I don't see him being a huge FPL asset. He can create chances. He will push on at times to provide through balls. For the forward players. So he might pick up the odd assist or two, but I wouldn't be banking on him. What I see from him in terms of FPL value is that he will make the players around him better. And I'm talking primarily about your Wilsons and your Sam Maximans, because let's be honest, they haven't had the best service. It's kind of been a little bit left up to them to go out and deliver on their own. Now they've got a guy that will give Newcastle a bit more control in the heart of that midfield and give them earlier, better passes, you know, in short, better service. So I'm more inclined to go with a Sam Maximan or a Wilson now that they've got Guimarães. So, but I wouldn't pick him individually.
Yeah, Guimarães priced at 5 million, listed as a midfielder if you are interested. Next up for Newcastle this weekend is Everton. That's one of 9 fixtures taking place, and that's what we're looking at next. With Chelsea away at the Club World Cup, your midweek fixture list has 9 fixtures as Thomas Tuchel's side and Brighton both won't be in action. The rest of the games get underway at 7:45 p.m. UK time on Tuesday. It's New Signings FC versus New Signings and New Manager FC at Goodison Park as Newcastle welcome Everton, as I was just saying. West Ham then take on Watford with Emmanuel Dennis back, eligible for that one. And then at 8, it's Burnley versus Manchester United. United have a really good record at Turf Moor, winning their last 5 visits. On Wednesday, the league leaders Manchester City host Brentford. Norwich look to make it 3 wins from 3 at home to Palace, and Spurs entertain Southampton in North London. At 8 p.m. then, Aston Villa host Leeds. On Thursday, we have 2 final games. Mo Salah could return for Liverpool's game against Leicester, and Arsenal visit Wolves, who have won their last 3 in the league. Your deadline to have your team sorted for those, again, is Tuesday at 6:15 p.m. UK time. It's time now, though, for me to put my feet up and let the panel do their thing, previewing one fixture each in detail. Let's start with one of the first and 2 teams we've already mentioned in the opening section. 2 teams with plenty of new faces. Newcastle versus Everton, Jonathan.
Yes, I mean, I've given one of my key stats away there in the previous section with the clean sheets, lack of clean sheets for, both teams in this game. It's quite a high-scoring game, generally speaking. The shame, I suppose, if you look historically, is that Callum Wilson's not around. He's very, very prolific in this fixture. I think 4 goals in his last 2 games against Everton. But I think this is going to be one of those games where we're going to learn a lot about both teams, in my opinion, you know, where they go from here. And I'm expecting it to be potentially quite high scoring. I think that both sides will kind of go for it. And you know, Newcastle parading their new signings as well is something that I think, you know, the fans will be certainly, you know, kind of up for it. And so I'm expecting, I think, an exciting game for sure. I've mentioned there Guimaraes is someone that I would consider at his price point, certainly. I think his price is low enough that he could be in line for maybe like a debut goal. I can imagine that. But it's hard to say that I'm going to necessarily definitely bring too many players in. I think it's a good game to watch. I think you can get a good advantage if you select wisely. The only other players I just mentioned before that I'm really considering is Trippier. But I think the reason I'm looking forward to this match is I think we'll learn a lot about both teams in this game. We'll learn what Lampard wants to do with his midfield. We'll learn about the likes of Demarai Gray. Will he keep his place? You know, how will he sort of pair Richarlison and Calvert-Lewin? So I think there's a lot of learning to be done in this game. And if you wanted to sort of take a punt somewhere, then you can look at it, like I said, the sort of high scoring, the fact that it's a traditionally quite high scoring game. Obviously, Newcastle, they won 2 of their last 3 against them at home. So, yeah, I think there'll be goals in it. Let's put it that way.
Interesting, isn't it? Because Newcastle have invested in their defence. Everton have invested in their attack. So something, it feels like, has to give. You mentioned that Newcastle have done well in this fixture. Alan St-Maximin has scored in both of Newcastle's last 2 home games as well. He's actually the game's 4th highest scoring forward. Adrian, you said he's someone that you would consider from that Newcastle attack. This looks like it could be quite a good game for him.
It could be, yeah. I wouldn't discourage anyone from bringing him in if they haven't already, because there will be a feel-good factor at St James's Park. I think the supporters will be buoyed by the new faces. When you've got so many fresh players to go and watch and cheer and get behind, I think it'll be a cracking atmosphere. And Everton will obviously be running their legs off for Frank Lampard. So I think this could be a really fast-paced game. More exciting than it would have been had it been Rafa's return to St James's Park. I think that one could have been a more dour affair. So no, I'm with Jonathan on that. So yeah, the attacking players are the ones I'd look at. I've got Demarai Gray, and I won't be taking him out. I know that he's not produced as many points of late, but I think his performance levels have still been pretty high. I think of all of their wide players, he's the one that's consistently delivered. It wouldn't be the smartest move on Lampard's part to drop him in his first match. I think he'll give him an opportunity.
Okay, well, Newcastle versus Everton, going to be very interesting in terms of looking at their players that they've signed and how these two teams, who haven't had the best of seasons so far, might shape up going forward. Next up, Sam, music to your ears there. I'm sure hearing that Dominic Calvert-Lewin stat for your team, but you've been looking at Aston Villa against Leeds.
Yeah, and I think this, for me, is a really interesting game. It's two teams which FPL managers have been looking at over the last few weeks. Aston Villa, well, it's been all change, hasn't it, since the arrival of Steven Gerrard back in game week 12. They've gone from being a team where nobody really wanted to invest in them because they just weren't in very good form, to being a team that suddenly the whole FPL community feels like it's talking about. And it's not a case of, shall we invest in Aston Villa anymore? It's more of a case of, well, how many of Aston Villa's assets should we invest in? They've made some cracking new signings over the January transfer window. Lucadine has obviously come in and already contributed the double-digit haul for his FPL managers. Coutinho has come in, scored on his debut, both of them now strengthening that starting 11. And on top of that, they've made Emi Buendia even better. So I think for me, he's had the best two games of football I've watched him play in a very, very long time in the last two game weeks. So suddenly we've got multiple players who are really nice options. For Leeds, since game week 12 as well, they've conceded 62 shots from outside the box, which is the fourth most in the division. They've also conceded 157 shots in total since the arrival of Gerrard at Aston Villa. And again, that's the fourth most in the division. That should benefit the likes of Buendia and Coutinho, as well as Ollie Watkins. So if you want to invest in any of those, that seems like a great opportunity. With Ollie Watkins especially, Leeds have conceded the most chances from down the middle of the pitch, 48 of those since game week 12. So going with somebody like Watkins this week could make perfect sense, especially as Aston Villa also still have a couple of fixtures to be rearranged.
A very comprehensive look at Aston Villa versus Leeds. I have no further questions. So finally, let's go on to you, Adrian. Liverpool versus Leicester. And quite frankly, I'm hoping you've got some team news for us here and you can tell us, is Mo Salah going to play?
I wish I knew. I really do, Kelly. My hunch would be that it's unnecessary to rush him back unless they get injuries in training to the other guys. And the other guys I'm talking about are Jota, Firmino and Luis Diaz. I think it's a good opportunity to give him his debut. I can foresee Mane and Salah being on the bench, but don't hold me to it, because they are such class acts that Jurgen might not be able to resist the temptation to use them. But I see goals. Leicester just don't keep clean sheets away from home, especially where they've got none. They've got zero clean sheets on the road this season. It was 3-3, wasn't it, in the League Cup between Liverpool and Leicester not that long ago. I would see another quite exciting match here. Leicester have scored, by the way, in every single away game this season. So they're always good value for getting on the score sheet. So I'm not saying ditch Trent Alexander-Arnold or Andy Robertson here, but I don't think a clean sheet's necessarily a gimme. But I do think it's a gimme that Liverpool score 2 or 3 goals in the game. So yeah, I've got Jota in my side, and he'll absolutely be an integral part of it, I think, for this weekend. On the Leicester angle, what about Patson Daka? Is someone that I was really considering before I made my wild card, and I kind of wish I'd included him in it now. But yeah, he's been directly involved in 7 goals in 9 Premier League appearances. So he's only had 9 Premier League appearances, 7 goals. That's 4 goals and 3 assists. So that's a direct goal involvement, which is a win in FPL terms, every 64 minutes. So we should probably be talking a little bit more about Patson Daka, especially with Vardy out at the moment. So he's someone that could be a nice little differential, I think.
What about James Maddison as well? Because in his last 8 Premier League matches, he's got 66 points, 5 goals and 5 assists. You've said there that Leicester score goals. Mm. Is he someone that we should be looking at in this fixture? I know a lot of managers brought him in recently. Would you play him in this game?
Yeah, I'd play him. Yeah, I would. Absolutely. He pinged a fantastic goal into the top corner in that League Cup game at the Kop end. So he's done it once already this season. He does feel like a big game player. He's definitely in better form now than he was earlier on in the campaign. Obviously, they're nice and refreshed as well, aren't they, Leicester? Barely, you know, most of their key men have hardly had a game since Christmas, really. December the 28th, I think Leicester have had 3 games since, but they've been patched up in those matches. So I think they'll be nice and fresh coming into the game. I wouldn't bring Maddison in for it because it's Liverpool away. But if I had him already, I think I'd play him, yeah.
Okay, interesting. Liverpool versus Leicester, really looking forward to that game. That's one of the 2 fixtures on Thursday night. Okay, well, that's 3 of our 9 fixtures covered in detail. Time now to check in and see how our panel's teams are shaping up for game week 24. Okay, so transfers and captains. Before we go any further, it sounds like Adrian isn't bringing in Mo Salah for this week. What are you doing, Sam and Jonathan? Sam, you first.
So I had grand plans to bring in Salah this week. I had the money in the bank. Everything was put in place for it. But a little bit of it required some rejigging, because it wasn't going to just be as quite as straightforward as, you know, swapping out one of my really cheap midfielders. So the plan was to sell Ronaldo to fund Salah. And I didn't have to sell Ronaldo for, you know, hugely cheaper person. I was planning to go to Harry Kane, actually, but hey-ho, no one's surprised about that. But that would have given me the opportunity to do that. But then the Premier League announced a double game week for Manchester United. And how can you sell Cristiano Ronaldo a week before he has a double game week in game week 25? So for me now, with Salah having progressed as far as he has in the African Cup of Nations, knowing therefore that he's going to play on the final day of the tournament, whether that's in the final or whether it's in the third, fourth playoff game, whether, you know, whether he's going to come back and immediately get 90 minutes against Leicester, I just don't know. He's had an awful lot of extra time in his legs at AFCON. So I think I'm trying to make myself feel better about the fact that I can't really bring Salah back in this week because I have to stick with Ronaldo. But I will be watching that game absolutely hiding behind my hands if Salah starts.
Jonathan, what about you? Are you going to be doing similar to Sam, or are you going all out to get Mo back in?
I think I'm going to hold off on Salah this week. Think of the two. I'm more tempted to think that Mane would come in just because I think generally he's quite robust. There's a 1 in 3 chance that, well, 2 in 3 chance that one of them is really, really celebrating heavily at the end of this week. Because trust me, if Egypt or Senegal wins AFCON, there's going to be some serious scenes for one of them. So, you know, it's potentially historic. If Mane does it, it's be the first time Senegal have ever won it. So, you know, I think there's a potential there for some parties and things like that. So I'm not gonna go for them. I will be getting Salah back as soon as I can, but it won't be this week. I think that Diaz just allows Liverpool to be a little bit more relaxed in terms of bringing them back in. I've got Kane up front, so I'm going to keep him, and I've got De Bruyne. Those are my big hitters. So one of them will come out eventually for Salah. But I think this week, you know what? Calvert-Lewin's starting to appeal to me potentially, maybe as a replacement for Dennis. And then I would probably then have to sacrifice De Bruyne potentially to get Salah back in eventually. So I think I'm going to play it cool this week and maybe have two free transfers, you know, and then stack up, see how the midweek games go, and then for the weekend go again. But as Sam has said, that Manchester United double game week, there's two little nuggets I've got from this show is that I quite like Adrian's selection of Varane. That's one I'm looking at, to be honest. I quite like that pick. And obviously the double game week coming up, that does maybe tempt me to bring in a Manchester United player. But no, I'm not bringing in Salah this week, to summarise.
Okay, well, Adrian, it doesn't sound like you think Salah's going to start, so I'm assuming you're not going to bring him in. What are you doing with your team? Yeah,
I've got the same train of thought as Sam, actually, with Manchester United's double game week. I think for the next 2 weeks, I'm going to have to make do without Mo Salah. I'll make the change after that, I think. So for me, the Chelsea offload continues. Lukaku goes. And it's a toss of a coin between Calvert-Lewin and Antonio. Antonio's got really good fixtures, but I really want to invest in Calvert-Lewin. The one caveat is that I think he missed training yesterday and he's not 100% fit, but I don't think he's going to play in the cup game at the weekend, but maybe he'll be safe for the Premier League match. I'm not sure. So right now, as it stands, I want to bring in Calvert-Lewin. I don't have enough players actually this week, so I need to take a 4-point hit. I'm going to bring in another midfielder, and that midfielder is going to be Bruno. I want Bruno because Manchester United have three nice looking fixtures, in my opinion, by the time I can get around to contemplating Salah.
Okay, so Sam, I almost feel like I've given you a bit of time to think there. Not that you need it. I'm sure the plans are very much in place. If you aren't bringing in Salah, just confirm to us all what you are doing.
Well, I'm going to do the very boring thing and follow Adrian in offloading the rest of my Chelsea assets. So I still have Rudiger, who I've really enjoyed owning. And he'll probably come back actually later on in the season when the Chelsea fixtures take a much better turn. But for now, I'm going to be going to Luka Dean. I think investing in Aston Villa right now makes perfect sense. And he has the attacking potential as well as the clean sheet potential too. So yeah, Rudiger to Luka Dean it will be for me this week.
Okay, so none of you are going to have Mo Salah, which means once again you've got a bit of a headache, I think, captaincy wise. You can't just put it on Mo and forget. Who are you going for, Jonathan?
Very tough decision, actually. I think that I will probably go for Kevin De Bruyne.
Oh, I like that. I like that a lot. Brentford at home.
Quite jealous of that one.
Yeah, so am I actually. And I bet a lot of listeners are as well. What about you, Adrian?
Yeah. I kind of wish I had KDB this weekend. Having talked up that Liverpool are going to score 2 or 3 goals at least against Leicester, I'm going to go for Jota. I trust him. I saw him with my own eyes in that League Cup semi-final at Emirates Stadium. He was dynamite. He was absolute world-class that evening. And if he can replicate that kind of form moving forwards, he stays in. So yeah, Jota gets the armband.
And Sam, finally for you?
I'm tempted by Jota, but I think for me, I'm probably going to go Ronaldo. It's a really nice fixture against Burnley. I know he's not been in the best form, but surely he's going to come good. He owes me a lot of FPL points.
He owes a lot of us a lot of FPL points, especially as I'm similar to you. He's going to be staying in my team this week when I was going to be getting rid. But of course, they've got that double game week ahead, so it feels a bit foolish to be doing that. Well, guys, thank you as always for your company on this Thursday. That's all we've got time for today. Enjoy the final match of game week 23, Burnley versus Watford on Saturday. But a reminder, you can't affect your teams for that, no matter how much you want to uncaptain and sell Emmanuel Dennis. Your next deadline, though, is on Tuesday, the 8th of February at 6:15 UK time. Due to the games being on Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday, we'll be back in your ears at the slightly later time of Friday to ensure we give you the most up-to-date information ahead of game week 25. In the meantime, don't forget you can check out all of the other FPL content on fantasy.premierleague.com and on the Premier League app. As always, thanks for listening. Bye-bye.